Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Guardians of the Holy Grail, a program which is dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. My name is Mark Amaro Pinkham, and I'm going to be your host for this show. The Guardians of the Holy Grail was actually my idea. I created it as a way of clearing up many of the misconceptions regarding the Holy Grail Mysteries, the Knights Templar, the Freemasons, the Illuminati, and all the other secret societies that are currently floating around the Internet within certain academic and lay communities. I'm hoping to, well, I might say, set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as direct testimonials from current and past members of the Knights Templar, Freemasonry, and the other secret societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries has either been lost or ignored. Our Gnostic Knight Templar organization is both a mystical order, wherein we practice both alchemy and gnosis, and it's also a research organization dedicated to finding the truth behind the mysteries of the Knights Templar and the Holy Grail and the secret societies. You can learn more about us and our organization, the International Order of Gnostic Templars, by visiting our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org. Now, this show is dedicated to answering all your questions. If you have any during the show, feel free to call us on our toll-free number, which is 888-815-9756. Today's show, we're going to cover the mysteries surrounding some very important manifestations of the Holy Grail. These are the crystal skulls, which have actually gained tremendous popularity over the last couple of years, thanks to Indiana Jones, but they've been around for virtually thousands of years. But yes, they are gaining some special significance and popularity right now. And there are a number of reasons why they have this current popularity, why they are so important right now. And we're going to hear some of those from our guests today. Some years ago, I was told by the Mayan priest, Humbots Men, that many of the crystal skulls were encoded thousands of years ago with information that we need now in order to make this transitional shift into another frequency on the planet, to make it to bring in this new era, this golden age. He told me this during some rituals we were doing at the time in the Yucatan, where we were using crystal skulls to reactivate some of the Mayan pyramids. So obviously that's another use of the crystal skulls today. About 10 years ago, I was fortunate to be in the presence of one of these ancient skulls that Humbots Men was referring to. You may have heard of him. He's known as Max. He's the crystal skull that's carried around the country by his guardian, Joanna Parks. I met Max with my wife when we were living in Washington State, and we rented time in a room with Max, and it was just a phenomenal experience. I lack the words to really describe what I experienced that day, but I know that when I opened up the door to enter the room, it was really like entering the room occupied by an incredible, powerful spiritual master. The energy was so thick, we almost had to fight our way to get into the room. But we knew it was coming from Max, of course, so we quickly went to Max and placed our hands on him, and immediately we were both full of this incredible energy coming from Max, and our whole bodies started to vibrate. I went into ecstasy. Andrew started speaking in tongues, and we both were having visions and hearing and feeling and seeing all kinds of things. It was quite an unforgettable day. Today's guest, Joshua Shapiro, has had a lot of experiences like that. He's one of the foremost experts on crystal skulls in the world. He's the author of one of the earliest books on the crystal skulls called The Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed, which he wrote with Sandra Bowen and Nick Nocerino. He's got a new book called Journeys of the Crystal Skull Explorers, which was written by himself and his co-author, Blue Arrow Rainbow. So a big welcome to you, Joshua, and welcome back to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's always an honor and privilege to be here.
Well, great. Thank you. Well, as I was mentioning, there are a lot of reasons why the Crystal Skulls are around today. Other than the ones that I just mentioned, what would you say about that? What would you say are some of the other reasons?
Well, what I try to do when I'm working with the Crystal Skulls is look at it from many different perspectives so that the information that I share can help people, regardless whether they've never heard of them or, you know, they're very involved, or they may even be a guardian of a crystal skull, which is actually quite a popular thing these days. There's quite a few people who have crystal skulls now. I think that one of their main purposes right now is that they're helping people with their spiritual evolution and growth, because what's happening, even with the new ones that people are buying, if the individual begins to work with it, meditate with it, take it to sacred sites, have it around them as they're having their own special experiences, these crystal skulls are coming to life. Like, for example, when we go out and we travel and people have a chance to meet the five crystal skulls we have, which I call the crystal kids, to me, they're already living beings themselves. Through the process of traveling the world and, you know, exposing them to what I call their older brothers and sisters like Max or Mitchell Hedges, E.T., Synergy, etc., and taking them to sacred site, as well as having them have the chance to work with a lot of people. I think the big skull we have has been held now by thousands and thousands of people since 1999. What happens is it's almost like these crystals start to become alive and they're like living beings. And when they get to this point, then I think, well, there are a couple of things that are going on. First of all, I believe and have been shown by my big skull when I first received it in Sedona, Arizona in 1999, that there's some kind of etheric energy network, which is actually a network that we are linking into when we do our world peace meditation, that links all the skulls together. And if indeed they are like computers, because the modern day computers made out of the same material as they are, the quartz crystal, they're actually sharing information with each other. And, you know, it's possible, like, for example, when we're traveling with our skulls, maybe some of the older brothers and sisters might say, hey, we want to show up and share some energy with the people which Joshua is dealing with. And they might be able to work through the skulls that we have as well. So I really think right now the most important thing which the crystal skulls are doing is it's helping people with their spiritual evolution and growth, besides what many of the prophecies talk about, that ultimately there will come a day where perhaps a certain group of crystal skulls will come together and their combined energy will help to literally take our planet into a higher vibrational frequency, into a time of peace, or what I call the golden age. So those are just some of my thoughts.
Well, what would you say have been some of the most significant things that you have learned from your crystal skulls?
One of the things that I find quite fascinating is that each one, as I said, we have five, is completely different from the other one. It's like each one has their own special service that they offer to people. I mean, some take on more of a feminine energy, some take on a masculine energy, some have both. The other thing that's quite interesting is, like, when we go to conferences, like we were at the 999 conference with James Tiburon in Arkansas last week, I saw that people were selecting some of our skulls much differently than I'd ever seen them before. The one that was quite popular was the one that looks like an ET. It's called the Star Being Skull. Some Chinese carver is making this, and it's quite popular. And there were quite a few people at the conference who felt drawn to work with that particular skull. So this is one of the things that I'm always interested in. Another thing is that they are changing over time. You can visually look at them. And it's like, you know, what I remember, like the big skull Portal de Luz, he's completely different than when I received him 10 years ago. Has a lot more cracks in there, and His structure is different. The lightness of his color is different. So this is another thing that we see with the crystal skulls is as they are evolving. That's why I call them the crystal kids, because it's like they're evolving into, you know, different beings. They start physically changing, their color changes, and this kind of thing, which I think is pretty remarkable, again, for new skulls. This is something that has been talked about with the older ones or the ancient ones. And the other thing I'm kind of proud of them is that people really love these skulls. They feel very friendly and comfortable with them, and in some cases there are certain people who say, are you sure I have to give it back to you? You know, it's like they become very attached to them. So, you know, and we have new adventures all the time. I never know what's going to go on each time that we go out on a trip and what happens. So, but the key for me is, and this is very important as I'm traveling, is I hope and do my best that these five skulls, and if there will be any other ones that join them, which usually happens, are able to record the frequencies and the energies of what's going on in the different places that we're going. And this year I've been going to some very interesting places that I've never been before. I've been able to see some crystal skulls that hardly anybody has known about. So when I take the skulls with me, what they're doing is they're literally like recorders. They're recording the frequencies of the energies and everything that's going on. So, of course, we have our Peru trip coming up, and I have no idea what's going to happen, you know, when we take them to Peru. What new energies will they be recording, or when we go to the conference in Mexico next month? So those are just some of my thoughts and things that I kind of marvel with as we travel with the skulls.
Well, Joshua, what initially got you involved with the crystal skulls? Was there a defining experience that you had that originally got you interested in the crystal skulls?
Well, like with most people, I would probably say it was never my intention. In other words, when I was growing up in life, I never thought, well, I'm going to be a crystal skull explorer traveling all over the world and, you know, looking for new ones and doing research and writing books and giving lectures. And now we're trying to get, you know, our feature film going and a documentary and conferences. You know, I never thought I would be doing these kinds of things. But I think what happens is people who are involved with the crystal skulls, and this isn't just for me. I've talked to so many people now. They have a defining moment where either they're meeting one or they're seeing one, and they change after being in the presence. Like you described your experience with Max. Well, for me, my defining moment was with an ancient crystal skull, which is known as Ami. That's made out of amethyst, which I saw, when did I see it, 1982 or 83. Can't remember. I think it was in 83. And, you know, at this point in my life, the only thing was is I was just interested, as probably any of your listeners who are of the same sun sign as I am, Aries, we love new experiences and new adventures. And so I had a chance to see one, so I'm going to say yes, I want to see it, but I had no idea what would be happening. And when I saw this crystal skull, me, you know, there was like a conversation going on with it, but I was only looking at a picture of it. I didn't really see the skull until a couple weeks later. But just looking at a picture of it was enough to activate something inside of me. And what I believe is that I have worked with crystal skulls in other lifetimes, I think in Atlantis, in Tibet. And when I saw the picture of Ami, somehow it activated these memories or the knowledge of working with it. And I knew in that moment when I was looking at the picture that they were vital for the future of humanity. And when you get a message like that, you have two choices. Either you can pretend you didn't receive it, or you have to take an action. And I happen to be a person who takes action. And that's probably the reason why I also chose to accept the spiritual name, because it's not my birth name, of Joshua. In the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, Joshua is defined as someone who's given inspiration or asked to do something by God, Creator, and he just goes ahead and does it. And this is pretty much, you know, the way in which I function. So once I received the message while he was with me, or remembered this, they were important. That's when I became more involved and started to see more, and eventually we did our first book, Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed, in 1989. Now we have the new book out, but I'm still kind of struggling to figure out how to get it out here in America, even though it's been published in 3 countries in Europe. So we'll just have to see. But that's the thing when you work with the crystal skulls, is not only your life changes, but things around them are completely unpredictable. You just have to kind of go with the flow and let it guide you, and then you go on remarkable adventures.
Well, if it's important for us to, or for the ancient crystal skulls to be recovered again now, where do you think we're going to find these skulls? I guess there's been some that have been found in the Yucatan and in Mexico associated with the Mayan culture. Where else on the planet do you think we're going to find these ancient skulls?
Well, first let me talk a little bit about what it means to be an ancient skull, or there's also a term called an original skull, because I see it a little bit differently. Primarily, the ancient skulls have been coming out of Mexico and Central America. However, there's a whole slew of new skulls, which I really haven't had a chance to research, but I've seen them, that are coming out of, I guess, China and Mongolia. Some are not made from quartz crystal, because that's basically what I study. I mean, different people are drawn to different gemstones made in a skull, but it's always been, for me, the quartz crystal. But there are some other types of crystal skulls coming out. Plus, when I was in Mexico, I saw like about 5 or 6 new ones. They're just all coming out of the ground. So the reason why I want to talk about this first before I directly answer the question is I think that probably there are thousands of crystal skulls. And what I'm talking about by crystal skulls are the quartz ones that either will be found in the future or are sitting with people privately that eventually will come out publicly. It has accelerated quite a bit, and even as we prepare to go to this conference in Mexico, there are several people who contacted us already about other skulls they have, which I've never heard of before. So I don't know if those people will show up at the conference, but I know there is one person who's definitely coming that, you know, wants to show us what it is that he's recovered. So my feeling is that there are a lot of very, very old skulls we call ancient that are over 2,000 years or older and could be any age, could be 5,000, 10,000, 100,000. We just don't have any idea. We don't have any scientific way to really validate the age of the skulls. But I also believe that there is, I don't know, they're calling it like an original crystal skulls or a set. Let's say that was given to humanity a long time ago, and my feeling is that none of those skulls have yet to come out. I also have heard stories, now going on to your question, where instead of just focusing in the areas where most of them are being found, and, you know, as I talked about now, these other kinds of skulls are coming out of China, I believe they're going to be found everywhere, because if we follow the legends discuss the idea that the skulls traveled. Like, for example, there's one called Synergy, which is with Sherry Whitfield in Tucson, that's not too far from you, that she was greeted by a man in England who told her that there was a tribe in Australia, when they saw pictures of Synergy, that they recognized it as a crystal skull, which they had quite a long time ago and had to release into the world. So I really believe that we're going to be discovering crystal skulls almost in every place. I mean, when the Mitchell-headed skull went to South Africa, the Zulu said that was their skull. We've heard from people in Australia and New Zealand, the Aborigines or the Maoris talk about that they have some knowledge of crystal skulls. We know Native American tribes who have knowledge of crystal skulls, the Mayans and the Aztecs, the Mesoamerican. So it's pretty much looking like it's almost a worldwide phenomenon, and it's accelerating because never in my life have I heard about so many different ones. I mean, there used to be a day when I first got started where we would basically know, you know, which ones were available and around. But now it's probably impossible because every month I'm hearing about somebody telling me about a new one. And in Mexico they have these hollow skulls that are coming out. They're Walker, who's also a crystal skull researcher and teacher. He has a number of those, and I asked him, Do we know how they're being made and where they come from? He says, we don't know. So it's a big mystery, and I think if I devoted the rest of my life to it, I probably would only touch a very tiny amount of the aspect of what this all represents, because it's getting bigger and bigger and harder and harder to figure out where all these skulls are coming from and how they're all interconnected. But I really believe we're going to find them all over the world. There's not just one area. Maybe the Mesoamerican cultures is the ones that came out first, because perhaps when Atlantis was destroyed, that was one of the areas where crystal skulls went, and then those people continued to carve them and make them. But whether they actually have any of what the so-called original ones, don't know.
Well, Joshua, I understand you're coming to Arizona in December, and one stop is going to be on the Hopi Reservation. Exactly. Do you know any past connections that the Hopi have to crystal skulls?
Well, there's been some rumors, but again, like in many instances where you hear stories and things, there's hardly any way to prove it. I can only tell you the experience I had the last time I was on the Hopi Reservation. We came there in 2004. There was a lady in Sedona who introduced us to family there. And the Hopi people that I met from the Water Clan, I don't know if you know him, Ruben, he was there at this conference, and that's primarily the person we're going to connect with when we go out there. He himself didn't know about any legends about crystal skulls, but there has been rumors or stories told about that there might be one that's buried on their land somewhere, which would be similar to another tribe that I did visit and meet, but I was not permitted to see their skull, which is part of the Navajo. And I don't know, they used to be called the Canecito, and they were talked about in the book Mystery of the Crystal Skulls by Morton and Thomas, but that's not their real name. And they have a crystal skull that they're protecting, but they're not showing it to anyone. So the only thing I can tell you is when we went to the Hopi land, we had our skulls with us. I went with my Kalaka Blue Owl Rainbow Eagle Woman. And as we were bringing out the skulls and doing a meditation, there was a presence that even the Hopi woman could feel that seemed to be the intelligence or the energy of some crystal skull that was on the land. But again, this is, you know, when you have these kind of paranormal experiences around the crystal skulls, you're going to hear stories from people that are going to have all kinds of visions and all kinds of feelings and all kinds of things happen to them. But trying to prove it scientifically that they're really having such an experience is almost impossible. So the only thing that I can share is when we were there in 2004, I felt an intelligence that seemed to be linked to crystal skulls. Now, whether this was, you know, that because we brought ours onto the property and then that skull, of course, is going to kind of wake up and talk to us, I don't know, but that was the experience. I do know that it was extremely important to take the large skull and place him, because we were brought by a Hopi person to the prophecy rock that they have near Old Arabi. And I did place Portal de Luz underneath the rock where the Hopi prophecy is, and I thought that was very important to do that. So I don't know. Again, sometimes when you are traveling with them, you are inspired to do things you wouldn't do normally, and sometimes when you do those things, is there a meaning for that? Was there a higher meaning that the crystal skull needed to be placed under that rock? I don't know. So we'll have to see when we go back if someone knows about crystal skulls or talks about it. But generally, because when the Europeans came and invaded the Americas, the Native Americans generally do not talk about their sacred artifacts. They'll act like they don't know what you're talking about. The other thing I remember is Bill Holman, who has the Mitchell Hedges Crystal Skull of Love. He did go to the Hopi land, I think it was last year. I don't know, maybe he's gone back this year. And he's had a connection with Grandfather Martin. And Grandfather Martin, I was told by him, had great reverence for the crystal skull. So those are the only clues I can offer related to the Hopi. But I always feel, for myself, a very powerful connection with the Hopi. And now that we have this new contact, when we go to Arizona in December, you know, we're really looking forward to go and just see what happens when we're there.
Are you planning to do any kind of special ceremonies or rituals on the Hopi Reservation?
Well, when I talk with this man, Ruben, he is going to, I didn't quite understand what it was he was going to ask, but he was going to ask if I could do perhaps a presentation or a sharing of the skulls with the people, but he needs the permission of the elders for that. So I don't know at this stage what's going to happen, but he said he was going to ask if I would be able to speak, because I was feeling that it was important, you know, to go bring the skulls and see what happens. So I don't know. But of course, if we have another interview after December, then I'll be able to let you know for sure what happened when we're there. Now, there's another interesting thing that's going to be going on in this area that I just heard about again from a woman who was at the conference I went to. And apparently, around the time we're going to be there, there's 13 grandmothers from different tribes, indigenous tribes, who are going to be having some kind of gathering by the Grand Canyon. And there will be some crystal skulls, I was told, that might be involved with that. But I don't know yet, because I haven't been able to speak to the people organizing the gathering. So that is kind of interesting for us, that we just happen to be coming and that conference is going on around that time.
Yeah, just another coincidence, right?
Exactly.
Well, we're going to take a short break now and get up and stretch. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes with a lot more about crystal skulls from Joshua Shapiro. So don't go away.
Houston, we have a problem.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
That's PBS Radio.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge. Brain.
Back with more of the Guardians, the Holy Grail. Today we're speaking with the crystal skull expert, Joshua Shapiro, And if you have questions for Joshua, you can give us a call at 888-815-9756. You can also learn more about Joshua by visiting his website at www.b/j/enterprises.com. Actually, it's not slash, it's dash. b-j-enterprises.com. If you want to know more about us, the International Order of Gnostic Templars, you can visit our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org, and you can find all kinds of information. I'm there speaking, doing some podcasts on various Templar-related subjects. You can sign up for our monthly newsletter. You can become an associate member. You can even become a full initiate. There's applications you can download and fill out and send back to us. There's also the 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course that covers all aspects of the Gnostic Templar path that you can purchase online. So take a look at that. We were having some very fascinating conversation with Joshua about the Native Americans and their work with the crystal skulls. What other tribes in America, in the U.S., have you found that have been using crystal skulls?
Well, for the Native Americans, I don't think publicly there are any tribes that acknowledge that they're using it, as far as I know. But I haven't been able personally to talk to all of them. I have visited with some of the different tribes, and they have an interest in the crystal skull, but mostly it's just the Mayans, and like the Aztec, who really talk about it. And then this one tribe that I met, which is part of the Navajo in New Mexico, acknowledged they had a skull. But for the most part, most of the Native Americans, they're not talking about it. And I believe that if there's any people on the planet who really fully understand the crystal skulls, it's these indigenous people. So part of the work that we do, as we can, is to try to help to build some bridges and see, if there's some way we can help them and maybe see when they're ready, if they want to begin to talk about it. But with the Native Americans, it's been actually quite difficult to find people who are really openly talking about it. I think part of the reason for it is just because of the abuse and the stealing of land and objects that many of the people that live in these tribes and reservations, they don't have any confidence that any person who's that hasn't been brought up from an indigenous perspective is really going to honor them and understand them. However, I do believe that there are a lot of people who are not Indians or weren't born as Native Americans who have the red heart. And I heard once that there was a shaman or elder who is telling the indigenous people that they needed to watch for this. And I think Sun Bear understood this as well, because he was one of the first to come out and start teaching the traditional ways. So unfortunately, I can't really answer your question because I haven't been lucky enough to really find a Native American who's been willing to share the information, although we do have contact with somebody that just came up, but we haven't talked with him directly yet, so I can't comment, and I don't know what it is I can share, because that's another part. When you deal with the indigenous people, they may say, if we share this with you, you're not allowed to speak about it publicly. But they're doing it to protect the skulls and not to be, holding on to the information. They know there's a timing involved, and the knowledge and the information they have can be given publicly. So it's a fine line you have to walk when you work with these indigenous people.
Well, Joshua, for some time now you've been doing planetary meditations using the crystal skulls, and you've been connecting with other people around the world that have been using their crystal skulls. What was the original inspiration for this, and how's it been going?
Well, the idea for doing a meditation with many guardians or caretakers of crystal skulls actually started, I believe it was in 2001. I had an interview with Uri Geller. I was visiting with a friend in Denver, and he was in England. And he asked me a question. He said, you know, the crystal skulls sound interesting, but how could they be used for world peace? And as I thought about it, then I just thought, well, you know, maybe one day many people have crystal skulls. We could all just work together and send out a loving and positive energy for the planet. But after I thought about that idea, it was like it stayed with me for a really long time, but I never could figure out, well, what way could we do that? How could we do that? And actually, the answer didn't come until I traveled with Bill Holman, and also Blue Arrow Rainbow Eagle Woman was there, and a few other speakers, to a conference in Italy, and I can't remember which city we went to, but it was a large city in Italy. And what happened to me at this conference was, is as soon as Mr. Holman brought out the Mitchell Hedges guy, I started getting sick. And as a matter of fact, when it came to the day where I had to do my presentation, I woke up that day with a very high fever, and I had to stay in bed until the very last minute. So in other words, it came for me just before I was going to talk, so that I could really rest and have my strength. And after I did my hour presentation, then I collapsed. So sometimes I think what happens is when you're in the presence of these very powerful artifacts, you go through a vibrational shift, which may affect you in a physical way. And so that's what was happening to me, is I was, you know, having fever and getting sick, and I actually had to stay like 3 or 4 extra days in Italy till I was strong enough to go on the plane. But while I was going through this, what happened is one morning I woke up, and I saw completely how to do the meditation, which days we should be doing it, how it should work, and that we should try to use the number 13, because this comes up with the crystal skulls. That's part of the legend that there could exist possibly an original set of 13 skulls, one larger skull surrounded by 12 other skulls. So once I received that information, then I felt on August 8th of 2008, we needed to announce the beginning of these meditations, which would start in this year. And we've actually done, see, we're in September now, so we've done 10 meditations for world peace this year, 4 what I call major ones, and I guess 6, well, they're not minor, but let's just say 6 lesser meditations than the other ones, because I was given to do 7 major meditations, 4 this year, 2 next year, and 1 on January 1st of 2011. And I tried to find a pattern to pick the dates related to the number 13. So now what we're doing is, since April, on the 13th day at the 13th hour for 13 minutes, we're doing another meditation. And the people that commented to me about the one we just did, which was after the energies of the 999, they said it was getting quite powerful. My goal is to hopefully by 2011 really rally the guardians and the caretakers to support it. You know, there are, I don't know how many people are doing the meditation. I'm going to guess probably several hundred, maybe 1,000, I don't know. I know on the mailing list that we have for the meditation there's about 250 people, but many of the people have actually organized groups, you know, where they've gotten 10 or 20 or 30 people together to do the meditation. And also, it does not have to be done by people who have their own crystal skull. There is a technique that we share with people where they can work with any piece of quartz crystal, which they can activate by placing it prior to the meditation on top of pictures of some of the crystal skulls that we have on our website, like ancient ones and some of the new ones that are quite active. So we'll have to see what happens from this, but it's just something that I was very inspired to do, because to me, if somebody's going to come up and say, Joshua, really, what are the crystal skulls are about? They are the teachers to teach us about how to live together peacefully and how to cooperate. That, to me, is their most powerful message that they have. And so if that's what they're about, then hopefully the people who are working with that will embrace that, and that we'll be able to get a lot of people to do these meditations, because when you work with a piece of quartz crystal, I believe that it amplifies your thoughts and your visions and what you're working on. And if you have a lot of people who are doing this simultaneously, then this can, of course, create a very powerful change. Because ultimately, the world that we create is what we believe and what we think. So if we believe and wish to create a very peaceful planet, and by working with the crystal skulls that are amplifying that thought and those feelings, then I believe that, you know, we can do it in a powerful way, sending out a very loving energy to the entire planet. Now, another thing that came up at the conference that was quite interesting, and I'm actually going to get some training from this individual, is, I forgot which part of the military, Navy SEALs, that's it. I met a person who was actually part of the Navy SEALs, and he was talking about that what he did when he was in areas where there was a combat and very dangerous, that he learned the technique through his training somehow, I think this came to him, where he would just literally focus and send out this very loving, positive energy, and none of his soldiers would ever be harmed or hurt, even if they were in a kill zone. It was like all of a sudden everything would just go quiet. So this was kind of like indirectly proof for me that if we're focusing on a loving energy, working with these loving beings, which we call the crystal skulls, I can only imagine, you know, what positive work that we could do to really help the planet and help people and everything. So this is kind of the story and the motivation. And, of course, in October on the 13th, again, we will do the meditation, and we have information on the website if people are interested to participate with us.
So they can go to your website and learn about the meditations and find out when the next ones are going to be. Can they also get on your mailing list through your website?
Yeah, they can either get on the mailing list for the meditation, or we have the Crystal Skull Explorer list. And what I'm doing on the Crystal Skull Explorer list, actually I was working on that before you called me for the interview, is I sent out already to the list the report of what happened to us in Arkansas, but now I'm working on getting up some pictures. People have appreciated that very much, that after, you know, I let them know what's going on, and then I show them some pictures from the places that we've been. Hopefully, we'll be able to hook up with some people that can help us in the future, so not only will we have pictures, but maybe we'll actually have some video, make like some small YouTube things that people can actually watch what's going on as we're traveling and what kinds of things we're seeing and so on.
Well, tell me, Joshua, what was your inspiration for writing Journeys of the Crystals, Crystal Skull Explorers, and what purpose do you see that it will serve right now for people that are interested in the Crystal Skulls?
Well, the new book that we have has never fully been published the way I want it to be, because when we shared it in Europe, I had to do a condensed version, because the book I have right now is like 600 pages, so it probably needs to be two volumes. And all the publishers in Europe wanted like 300 pages. What I'm trying to do in this new book is I'm trying to focus on the different aspects of the crystal skulls that have come up for us. For example, from history of the ancient and old skulls to what's happening to people working with the new skulls. Also, what kinds of experiences are people having? Also, how you activate the crystal skulls. We also have a research section in there because I'm thinking, you know, if I went out on the street and I talked to, you know, just an average person who maybe not so interested in things of the paranormal or spiritual, and I started sharing with him some of the experiences that I've heard or that I've personally had, they might think this is science fiction or fantasy. But there is one thing that I know for a fact that's absolutely correct related to the skulls, and it's this comment. When a crystal skull has awakened, when the crystal has awakened, and it starts working the way like some of the older skulls do, there is an electromagnetic energy field that's around that object. Now, we may not understand fully how that electromagnetic energy field is there, if it's some kind of spirits that are working through the crystal, because I think crystal is a portal to other dimensions, or, you know, exactly the process. So I think we still need to do a lot more research about it. But the thing that I know for a fact, which is coming up in all the research that we're doing, is that there's an energy field that's around the skulls. It's not magnetic, as was shown in the Indiana Jones film. It's electromagnetic. And also the energy field that's around the human being is electromagnetic. So it means when a person comes in contact with these crystal skulls, they're going to have a reaction or experience. So what we tried to do in the book, too, is do some kind of scientific testing. You know, we had no money for this, so we just had to find people who had different equipment and then find people who want to volunteer as test subjects. But we probably tested, I don't know, about 100 or 150 people. And I started taking notes in our sessions that we had with people, what kind of experiences they were having. And also, too, I was listening when we do our group meditations, which we do in our workshops, and people are meditating with the skull and listening to the experiences that people have. And there is no doubt that there is some kind of electromagnetic energy field around the skull. So in the new book, what we're trying to do is we're trying to look at the history, the stories, the research, the legends, and I found a way how to put it all together so that no matter what aspect the person is interested in about the crystal skulls, that's what this new book will kind of cover. I'm also hopeful that by presenting the research that we have done, that perhaps there might be some real scientists who might say, you know, there's something going on here. We need to help Joshua, or possibly work through our nonprofit foundation we have, the World Mystery Research Center, and really try to understand, you know, like, why all these interesting phenomena is happening around the skull, or perhaps figure out a way how we can tap into the incredible knowledge and wisdom which I think some of these crystal skulls have. For example, if you talk to the Mayans, they will talk about going into meditation and receiving things telepathically. But I believe that eventually, because I keep seeing a vision of this in my mind, maybe they had such a device in Atlantis, that there will be a kind of device that we'll be able to develop. Maybe we already have the technology to do it, where we just connect it to a crystal skull and then we're going to see people talking to us, sharing information and knowledge and all kinds of things. So this is kind of the idea I had for the book, is to try to come up with it in a form where no matter whether a person is a beginner or just curious or somebody who's very involved, that they're going to find something in the book that will be of great interest for them.
Well, you're a very busy man, I know, Joshua. You're also working on a feature film, a documentary, of sorts. So what's that all about?
Okay, well, I believe, related to the feature film, and this is why I was hoping that Indiana Jones would really do a good job, is that the most powerful way to teach people about universal truths and say, aspects of themselves, of their inner selves, is by telling a powerful story. So I think probably since the early 80s, I've had an idea for a feature film. And where we're at with it right now is we just have finished. I'm working with a scriptwriter in Australia, and we actually are just about done with the latest version of the script. So now we're about ready to start, because I have a contact here who says he knows some independent investors, to look and see if we can actually have this story told. Besides showing the crystal skulls in as accurate way as possible, and also showing the connection the skulls have with the indigenous people, the real purpose of this movie, which will be completely different than all the 2012 movies that are going to be coming out now, is not to show the destruction of our world, but to show how the crystal skulls save our world. And then, if that film is successful, I already have a three-part story. This would be story number two. We would have to go back into the past, back to Atlantis, to show where the crystal skulls really came from. And then, the most challenging story will be to show how the world will look like in the future when we have peace. And then we have completely different challenges for us that don't have to do with fighting each other and conflict. I'm not exactly sure how that story's going to go. but that's kind of my goal. So it's kind of like a three-movie project. The documentary project that we're trying to do is a little bit different because when the Indiana Jones film came out, I was actually a consultant for a couple of documentaries, and there was one that actually they showed me on, but the things they chose for my interview to use was information that really said nothing. It didn't give, let's say, like the meat and potatoes of what the crystal skulls were about. I chatted with some of the other researchers that I know, and I said, what did you think about these documentaries and everything? They said they didn't go far enough. And so what I'm looking to do is to find a way to create a different kind of documentary, like no documentary that's ever been done before, in order to be able, again, to share really what we're seeing as researchers and the stories that are going on around the skulls. Because like the Sci-Fi Channel I was a consultant for, they had 2 hours, but there was a lot more they could have done, and they just went in some different direction. So, I mean, it's all good because through the documentaries and the Indiana Jones film, a lot more people became familiar with crystal skulls. But I was really hopeful that during that door, that opening, that really we could tell people what's really going on about them. And I just was kind of a little bit disappointed. So I don't want to be ungrateful to all the people who did this, because after the Indiana Jones film came out, we became a lot more busy. And actually, and I don't know how to explain this, but probably for the first time in over 26 years, I'm not only so busy, but I'm busy enough that I'm not struggling financially as I have been in the past. So, you know, we have enough coming in. We're not wealthy, but we have enough funds coming in from what we're doing, you know, selling books and doing the sessions and doing the lectures and things like that, that we can live comfortably. And, you know, I even think about when I went to Europe, I didn't have to pay once for a place to stay. People were very generous and helping me to allow me to travel there. So it's just things have turned around a lot, I think, since the movie came out. So, and it's like you said in the beginning, Mark, this is something that's not going to go away. It's getting more and more intense. More and more people are interested. More and more people know about it than ever before. So I believe that there's something very important about the crystal skulls now, and that's why so many people are interested. They're sensing it on an inner level, that there's something there for them, and they have to kind of learn about it or get their own skull and have their own experience.
Well, yeah, you are doing excellent work, Joshua, and very valuable work, and yes, I believe that it looks like it's going to get even more valuable. One more question I want to ask you, as a Knight Templar, always curious about the skulls that the Templars use in their rituals. Do you have any evidence that they used crystal skulls, and maybe where those crystal skulls are hidden today?
No, and that's part of the reason why I'm joining your group soon, is I believe that there is a connection with the Templars for this. And you know, I don't know. Maybe as I've become a member and I have more knowledge about the Templars, maybe some intuitional or inspirational ideas may come. The only clue that I heard came through the co-author of our first book, Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed, through Mr. Nasserino. He talked about seeing a crystal skull when he was in France in the Second World War. What did he call the skull? Something to do with like the light of Christ or something like that. And it was with a secret society. And for some reason, they asked him a question and he knew the answer. And so they showed him this crystal skull. I don't know where it is now. But I kind of got a feeling when, as he's telling the story, that there might have been some connection with the Templars. So far in everything I've researched and all that, I suspect there is this very special connection, but I have no clue yet where there might be a crystal skull that the Templars may have had.
So, well, you lived in Europe for quite a while in Holland, and did you come across any crystal skulls that are, like, right now floating around Europe that had perhaps been in Europe for a long time, and maybe they were connected to the Templars?
Well, there's a man that I know named Eric Finzi, and he is kind of like a dealer in gems and minerals. And he, I think he came from Belgium. And so while listening to what people are saying and everything, it seems that there has been some crystal skulls that went through Europe in the past. I didn't see any of them while I was there, but that were going through different hands and things like that. So it's possible that there could have been such special skulls that people had, but when these skulls were going through Europe, they were staying in the hands of private owners. You know, it wasn't like they were being shared publicly. And then there's also these carvers in Eder Oberstein in Germany who are very accurate. Big discussion about whether they were actually carving crystal skulls, which some people might think are quite old or ancient, that were actually carved by these carvers. There was one master carver we met who said, yes, during the 1800s, the carvers took it upon themselves as a personal challenge, because carving a crystal skull was not easy, and they didn't have the diamond tip tools that we have today, which just cut through the quartz like butter, and they were taking it as a personal challenge to make some skulls. So it could be that the skull came through them, because in those days, they never identified the objects made by who was the person who made them. They didn't keep any records. So somebody would make it, and they would sell it, and that would be that.
So, I don't mean to cut you off, Joshua, but we are out of time.
Sure.
And we'll just have to have you come back again so you can tell us some more. I feel like there's a lot more to be said, and so I hope you will come back in the future. It would be great to have you on the show again, and thank you so much for being on today.
Well, thank you, Mark, and sure, it would be a pleasure to come back anytime.
Excellent. Thanks very much. Well, for those of you that are fans of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, next week we have a very, very special show. It's with author, internationally famous Christopher Knight, who's going to come on and talk about his new book, Before the Pyramid. You might know him as the author of The Hiram Key and a bunch of other books. Amazing man. So come back next week. I'll be here. It's going to be fabulous. So have a great week, and see you next week. Bye for now.